they simply waste a day away, then we'd say nothing would come between us. Two dreamers. Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep, he can't hang around.
Linton has now officially been put on the broadcasting map, with Tessa Snart taking midweek drivette duties to a whole new level.
To which Carol Edwards has said, lovely pick, Tessa. Hope you're okay. Love, Nan.
Aww.
And there is the pick of Tessa hosting the third volume of Sound and Country Vision. Creaks alone about sorts of other species. Anyway, whilst we move on, Hannah, would you like to give a little dedication to your brother, who you are currently looking to seek out presents for, etc., because it's his birthday coming up soon, so you can now say happy birthday if you wish.
Well, happy birthday, Scott, for next week, and I hope your foot repairs soon enough so you can play Quidditch in the Southern Tournament in October.
There you have it. Aww. These are the kind of messages.
Not your average message, is it?
She's not your average midweek trivette. Yes. You know, it's all, that works our way through that. Named after Scott Tracy, perhaps.
I don't know. Actually, I think he's just named after my dad. His middle name's Scott.
Oh, so there we are. Of the Antarctic. It's all great stuff. Okay, coming up in the second part of the production after the news, we'll hopefully have another chance to speak to Ian Lennox and Arthur McKenzie. Will be with us. We'll be speaking to Dr. Sarah Jarvis about drink aware, Harrison Kelly about the best way to actually decorate your home and house, and indeed we'll hopefully squeeze in Amy Yorston with a little bit of news about backseat driving and how passenger pressure can be really critical to, you know, all sorts of good things. And the weather today, highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It'll be a cloudy start. Well, we had a cloudy start. Rain will clear away, leaving a day which is breezy with sunny spells.
Hi-de-ho, neighbours. This is actress, producer, Los Angeles Breakfast Club board chair, and Fuzz Aldrin enthusiast, Lily Holloman. I have been a proud member of the expanded Alex Lefchick midweek drivette team for years. Congratulations to you, dear listener, on having found this oasis of podcast audio magic in the cosmos.
Now, many drivers in the world have often complained about the phenomenon of backseat driving. Passenger pressure is, of course, a 21st century phrase that comes together with respect to that. And 4 out of 10 British passengers apparently keep quiet in the car because they don't want to upset the driver, whilst a further 47% believe that the driver is doing them a favour, so feel obliged to stay stumm. 12% of Brits actually simply don't have the confidence to say what they really think. Now, to address this and really put some flesh on the bare bones of passenger pressure and so on, we're delighted to welcome the ace road safety expert from Allianz, the wonderful Amy Yorston. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Amy, share with us this whole notion. I mean, clearly you've had lots of tales over the years of people who ride shotgun and in essence they sort of either can't keep quiet or they panic, or indeed the reverse of the whole situation, they don't say anything at all and actually have a very unpleasant trip.
Yeah, I think backseat driving's got a really, really bad reputation. We've all been in the car with somebody that just won't shut up, which as a driver is really, really irritating. But our research has proved that actually, really, passengers can play a massive part for road safety if they just have the confidence to speak up. If somebody's got really bad habits in a car, it could be the difference between telling someone to slow down, potentially stopping an accident. So we're asking people to sort of get over that British reserve and very politely ask the person you're with, you know, do stop texting at the wheel, it is illegal, or do slow down, and just speak up, really, because it is something that has got a very bad reputation. But actually, our research showed that most drivers 67% in fact, wouldn't object to being told if their passenger's not happy and not feeling particularly safe.
Which is quite interesting. 94% of those confirmed that they would change their driving behaviour if asked. I think I've only had a couple of experiences as a passenger where I felt a little bit uncomfortable when the driver decided to actually go the wrong way up a one-way street and various other factors that were there in central London as well. Don't talk to me about it. but you know, from this perspective, there is that sort of sense of clearly there are obviously the regulations, as you mentioned, obviously texting is illegal when you're sort of in charge of a car, and quite rightly so. What is the kind, I mean, is it something that's just peculiarly British? Because, you know, clearly if you go around Rome, Paris, other European cities, it would seem as though, you know, the passengers don't say anything.
Who knows? Yeah, I think we're just very polite, but maybe we have the power to change that. And I think particularly as we're getting into the winter with winter driving, as the roads will get icy and we'll get lots of rain, I think it's even more important that people speak up as we enter the bad weather period.
The advent of the satellite navigational system probably has solved a number of challenges with respect to the usual cause of arguments in terms of having a navigator who didn't quite read the map as effectively as they could have done. I mean, is it a case that we still have tension, though, when we're actually dealing with our friends and partners? Is there a sort of shift in terms of our general behaviour from that point of view?
Yeah, well, the people who came back to us and our research, it's quite interesting that they felt most unsafe in a car of a friend. So to put that into context, partners only came off as 17%, friends came off as 50%. So I don't know if that means that we're happy to speak to our partners at home and tell them off, or just be a little bit more vocal, or if we're worried about upsetting our friends a bit more. But that was quite interesting. Compared, we looked at taxis, we looked at colleagues' cars, but friends came out as the very strong one. So they're the people that we're sort of sitting in the front seat going, oh, please slow down.
Slowing down, of course, is interesting. Any sort of indication that you have a situation where the passenger would actually sort of want the driver to speed up?
Yes, there was a few people actually who did come back to the research saying that's something that they have asked people to do. You know, you are on a motorway, please keep up with the traffic.
I don't know, sometimes you can get a nosebleed if you go over 60. You know, it's a whole routine that happens there. And tailgating, obviously, that's another sort of area which is irritating. I've often thought we really need to have a motor car manufacturer that can actually have a little sign that you can flash up saying stop tailgating the car in front.
Or have a parking sensor, but in the front, so it's not beeping if you're too close to somebody.
We should obviously set that up as a Yorston Left Tuke package. You know, work our way through that. What about yourself, Amy? Any sort of challenges when you've actually been either a passenger or a driver when you've either been impacted by passenger pressure?
I'm quite a cautious driver, so I would like to think that all my passengers are quite happy in my vehicle. Although the main thing for me is it's normally a pressure to change the music I'm listening to, because I do have a car soundtrack. So it's not a safety issue, it's more just an issue of taste.
Yeah. And the suggestions in terms of how to speak up, I mean, one would hate to sort of have to get a pre-driving agreement, a bit like a pre-nuptial agreement, to say, you know, you will address these key points and so on. But is it just a case of comment? I mean, is it best talking about this when you're not actually in the driving situation?
If it's someone, as we were saying, with friends who you know quite well, I think it's good to address it beforehand, and then there's no upset. But nearly 60% of the drivers said they wouldn't be distracted by somebody telling them. So I think it's a case of gauging what the situation is and not screaming in their ear, not being that person that gives a running commentary and watch out for that pedestrian, like a sort of Hyacinth Bouquet scenario, but actually just saying, actually, I'm sitting here, we've been in the car now for a few minutes, I'm not feeling very comfortable, please could you do X? And as we said, you know, most people said they would respond to that and change their habits. So I think it's all about how you approach it and not be the really whingy person that's just going on and on for the sake of it, but actually phrasing it really nicely.
And across Britain, are there any kind of regional or national differences? I mean, are the Scots intrinsically safer than the Welsh or vice versa?
Really interestingly, with this research, there wasn't much regional difference. Mm. Or gender difference, which is fascinating, because a lot of the other road safety studies we've done, you do see a big difference. But with this, I think it is really a genuine national issue that we're all just generally too polite.
Further information, where's the best place to go, Amy?
You can find us at alliance.co.uk, or you can visit us at Alliance UK News on Twitter.
You see, and that is why Amy Yorston is the road safety expert from Alliance. Excellent stuff. Amy, it's been fabulous just touching base with yourself. People are listening to this during the morning drive, or indeed the
later. Safely.
Exactly. Or indeed, they might have taken it as a podcast and they're listening to it in their own time. But either way, as you rightly said, drive safely. The other classic line, of course, better drivers arrive alive.
Well, that's true too.
Amy, will you return in the not too distant future and keep us appraised of Alliance's excellent work in this field?
I would absolutely love to.
Ian Lennox in Newcastle, are you a safe driver, a good driver? Are you a backseat driver? Are you a passenger pressure employer? What sort of perspective do you take on the whole automobile scenario? He's gone. Just where you thought it was there. Sometimes you think phones clearly, they just have this tendency to sort of just work through all sorts of that. We will get Ian back. Honestly, we will work our way through that. But let's put the same question to Tessa. Driving, backseat driving. Are you sort of prone to actually complain, or do you sort of say, no, I'm just going to get through this somehow?
No, I don't mind. If somebody wants to sit in the front, I literally will just sit in the back. Oh, it doesn't bother me. Right. But I know there's quite a few people.
Soundtracks to travel? Is that also?
Yeah. But quite a few people have told me that once, like, they've passed their test, they don't like being backseat, in the backseat. So.
Ben?
I'm not too bad, actually. I think the only bugbears I have is if someone's on their phone while driving. That's the only thing that really annoys me. Or someone hasn't put a seatbelt on. It just bugs me. Yeah. Obviously, yeah, I know it's against the law, but there's that as well. But I don't know, personally, it just has to be right.
Always the way. And Hannah, who's actually regaled us with a huge tale, which we can't go into for obvious reasons, or legal reasons, and the sort of passage that she's been involving through the years, the driving scenario.
Well, I can't drive, so I don't think I have any qualifications to comment on a person's driving. Well, apart from if they are using the phone, but most of the time it's my mum driving, and she doesn't use a mobile phone while driving, that's good.
It's okay. A random survey, admittedly. You can contact our studio at sirenonline.co.uk if you've got one or two other things you'd like to add to the whole sequence. Up next, Harrison Kelly and Marianne Shillingford will be talking about the best way to, after you've bought your home, how to actually sell it.
In a multiverse awash with galactic wonders, the role of the midweek drivettes is simple. As Tessa Snart, Hannah Brown, Katie Doerr, Jessica Ward, Fiona Williams, Eva McDonald, and Emily Jones continue broadcasting across the cosmos on 107.3 Siren FM.
Home improvements, the challenges with respect to home improvements, the best way forward with respect to selling, not selling, etc., painting your front door white to increase the chances of a quick sale. We've all heard the notion of freshly baked bread being the answer to enticing buyers. Well, to address some of the issues released by a new survey by the TSB in terms of what Brits look for when they buy, we're delighted to welcome a true dynamic duo. First of all, home improvement hero at TSB, the legend Harrison and Kelly. Good morning, Harrison.
Good morning.
And creative director at Dulux, the equally legendary Marianne Shillingford. Good morning, Marianne.
Good morning.
So, Marianne, if we can come to you first with respect to the average Brit's perfect house, comprising a white front door, four bedrooms, four front-facing windows, a front garden with a rose bush, and a neatly mown lawn.
Yes. Now, it sounds like a kind of child's drawing, doesn't it? It's our perfect home when we close our eyes.
Well, I was thinking possible play school days back in the day, but still.
Yeah. I mean, it's simple. And this simplicity, we want to have a home that we can imagine ourselves living in. And so the white front door would be a kind of completely neutral, very simple, and we want to put our own stamp on it once we've bought it. What's quite interesting is beyond the white front door, colour comes into its own, and the way that the space is planned. People are less likely, I think it's a much lower statistic for people painting their houses white, because you remember, you know, paint everything white and it'll sell the house, make it look bigger. But actually, people want colour. And if you use colour cleverly, and if you plan the space cleverly, people will remember the home for all the right reasons, and they can imagine themselves living in it much more easily. And when I mean colour, I don't mean bright pink, anything that screams at you. I mean those kind of swanky, kind of grayed off colours, neutrals, deep blues, something that will, you know, the world's favourite colour is blue, something that people will remember and help your home stand out from the crowd.
Presumably Battleship Grey is not going to actually cut the mustard unless you want to have a military sort of input into
it. It has its place, maybe not khaki green, but greys are big.
Harrison, colour from your own perspective, is this something which you thought, yeah, well, obviously that's the key thing. We need to have that sort of appropriate colour to, you know, get people into that mindset of saying, actually, it might be a bit of a fixer-upper, but we can still actually work on this colour-based thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a third of people have already admitted that they have every detail of their ideal home mapped out before they go and buy it. So there are two-thirds of people which are still very open to ideas. And we recently sold my mum's house, and before we sold it, you know, I hadn't been working with Dulux, I hadn't been working with TSB on how you improve your home. So I painted everything Magnolia. And you know the most amazing thing? The people that moved into it have just repainted everything all over again. So I could have saved them a job and really looked into, you know, making the home interesting and personal as well when they're selling it.
I was fascinated to find that respondents admitted to turning down homes for blue floor lights in the kitchen and indeed an ornate fish tank built in the wall. Were they not around when Jean-Luc Picard had his fish tank built into the Starship Enterprise? For goodness sakes.
I don't think so. I mean, those are some of the most bizarre things that we've seen, but I guess the most bizarre thing that I've ever seen was once when I was doing at one of my friend's house and we was peeling back the wallpaper. We found a lot of hair in the wallpaper. I thought, this is very strange. We started to peel it back even further. And we saw RIP written on
right.
the wall.
Yes.
That was very, very bizarre.
I suppose there could be a gothic market out there, perhaps.
There could be a gothic market out there.
Thinking maybe Whitby in certain times of the year, but perhaps not. Let's move on to those most enticing scents for potential buyers. We've talked about the baked bread scenario, but I see chocolate chip cookies have made an appearance.
Yep, chocolate chip cookies, coffee, fresh laundry, fresh flowers. All of the usual things that you might expect. And these are quite easy to pick up in the supermarket as well. I mean, we're not expecting that people go out there and bake their own cookies from scratch. You can get dough, put it in the oven 15 minutes just before your prospective buyers come over. All of these things really, really do work when you're trying to make a great first impression.
Marianne, for many years when we thought of Dulux, we thought of that large dog, which I sprung to mind when you were thinking about hair in the walls. I thought, for goodness sakes, let's not hope the dog actually isn't there. Oh, that was a nightmare. But in terms of, clearly, we're now into the second decade of the 21st century. Are there any significant changes that we're seeing? I mean, is less more? I mean, you mentioned about the muted colours and so on, and maybe the shift from white and so on. Are there paradigm shifts from that point of view as well?
Well, as a company that make paint, we do much more than colour. The new thing is to design your space beautifully, not just decorate it. So it's so much beyond design, beyond decorating, and beyond paint into great design, and using the digital a digital design service in order to create a space that's perfect for you and your family, because we're all individuals, and I think often people think that one solution is a catch-all, but it's not. We're incredible, especially in this country, we're incredible individuals, and getting a space that's designed beautifully. People have this idea that an interior design is going to cost them an absolute fortune, but you know, an online interior design service like Amazing Space is £75, and you have, you know, one you can have per room, and it can be one beautiful room that helps you understand the full potential of your home. So decorating is moving on. We think about the space and the individuals that live in it and try and maximise the potential of that space through colour and design. So it's much more than just paint.
And Harrison, does this apply whether it's a house, a home, a flat, any kind of dwelling place which you're looking to actually put on the market?
Yeah, absolutely. As we all know today, we don't all live in a very uniform house. So wherever your, you know, space is, it can apply to that. Just creating, I guess, more than a house, a home. Wherever you call the home.
You see, this is one of the reasons why I could understand in the original piece that we actually had here, we had a introduction of Harrison Ford as opposed to Harrison Kelly. I figure he did some carpentry, but I thought it was a different sort of line on that basis. There is only one Harrison Kelly. That's
well, he's just as good looking, I'm telling you.
Well, there you have it, you see. Marianne, website to go to find out further information about home improvements and possibly Dulux as well?
But you can put interior design, Dulux Amazing Space, put it into the search engine and you'll find us.
The magical things will work our way through that. Marianne Shillingford, Creative Director at Dulux, and Harrison Kelly, Home Improvement Hero, HIH at TSB. I mean, are you wearing a superhero costume at this present, Harrison, because at this present moment? Because I think you should be, really.
Well, that would be spoiling it for the radio.
Very true. Many thanks. And hopefully we'll speak again very soon.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I know that producer Rachel wants me to use the giant lizard's line there. It's okay. We save that in all sorts of ways for another time, another place. Ian Lennox, have you safely returned?
I have.
Good, that's okay then, because it's cut off in midstream just after passenger pressure. So he didn't have the chance to actually find out whether you would consider yourself to be a backseat driver, somebody who was concerned about driving, or indeed whether you'd responded to passengers who found maybe your own approach to driving a little bit sort of tense.
Well, I haven't driven for about 5 or 6 years now.
Well, there we are.
And I've noticed the decline in behaviour and manners of people, of drivers on the road now. Yeah. And part of it seems to be a lot of roundabouts have a lot of lanes and no one seems to know which one to be in. Mm-hmm. And it's got to cross you.
Well, never mind. It'll get better. That's the important thing. But what about decorating your house? Are you more a kind of fresh bread person? Are you somebody who would effectively turn around and say, yes, I always like to have white all over the place? Or are you more creative?
I'm a person who has put a very light colours throughout the house because I've got a very old Victorian house.
Ah.
And it's quite dark. So I'll just put lots of
Gothic.
Light colours
Gothic
in.
Is what we're looking for here. Tyneside Gothic. Why, I pet. Halloween just round the corner. First, spooning out our pumpkins before we know where we are.
The cats are scared of going somewhere my landing.
Not anyway.
Oh, Ollie and Oboe.
So, Ollie and Oboe,
how
Tessa. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's get Tessa with her own. Move that microphone closer to your good self, otherwise, Lord knows what could actually happen.
Is that
that's
better?
That's
there we
a
go.
A lot better, you see. It's marvellous. Incidentally, for Ian's benefit and indeed the listener, I have just posted the Midweek Drivette team for today, Ben, Hannah, and Tessa, in full force in the studio. Very good. All bright-eyed and bushy-tailed here on the last Midweek Drive morning edition of September 2016. Tessa, we haven't had a chance to have Ian's view on country music, so I'm going to put... I'm going to, as you are the host of Sound and Country Vision, I'd like you to select one of the tunes that we played yesterday that Ian can effectively sort of say, right, I'll cast my ear over that. You might like to go to the Dear John letter. It's tragic, admittedly, Gene Shepherd. I mean, that would be also
quite a comical one.
You may say comical. Ben, Ian, and myself might say that's how the gender issue challenges just work. I mean, Ben, have you ever encountered the Dear John letter from Gene Shepherd?
No.
Ian. Ian's gone very quiet again.
He's bored already.
I'm waiting for the music to start. But...
All right, Ian. I think
I can hardly wait.
We're going to go for the late, some might say great, actually we would say great, Gene Shepherd. I'll warn you, Ian, if you probably need a box of tissues for this because it, from a male's point of view...
It's not good.
It isn't.
When I tell you who I'm wedding, you won't care, dear, anyhow. Now the ceremony has started, and I'll wed your brother, Don. Will you wish his happiness forever, dear?
It's too much to take, sorry, it's just...
it's too much.
So, I mean... And Tessa did not understand the whole phenomenon of Dear John letter. I think Ian Lennox, what did you make of Dear John?
Oh, I've had to sit down.
Exactly.
Well, it's right up where Ruby Don't Take You Look to Town, an old chef from Elvis Presley.
Ben, presumably the first time you've encountered.
It's unique. I'll give it.
Well,
that.
If you're seeing me looking particularly happy, just play them that. I'll bring them back to earth.
Yeah, that's when we thought we were getting away from what country music was, and then suddenly, whoosh, there it's there. Hannah, any questions you'd like to put to Ian Lennox?
Sure. What are you up to today?
I've just got back from Bulgaria, and my sister is going to take my levs that I had left over to the travel agent, so I'm hoping to get quite a few pounds back.
Oh.
It's the highlight of my day. And I'm also playing, I think I've done that now, replay parts of the Newcastle game 6 times before breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, Ian, just...
I may yet get on the Man City 3-3 with Celtic.
If you want a game...
If it had been 4-3 to Celtic, I'd have been watching it by now, I'm telling you.
Yes, thank you, Ian. Yeah. But Bulgaria, because clearly Arthur McKenzie was stepping into the Ian Lennox slot, so to speak, in your absence, although Arthur will be joining us in around about 15 minutes or so from now. We thought we'd keep the Lennox-McKenzie thing going. Yeah, I know, it's amazing. So whereabouts in Bulgaria? What did you do? What were the excitements that you encountered?
It was by the Black Sea, and it's a strange... and the Bulgarian staff at the hotel, is a very nice hotel, actually. It overlooked the Black Sea, and had a lovely view from my... balcony, and the staff were absolutely phenomenally nice, but there was things I wasn't used to. There was a very slow internet, and I had to deal with some business things. It took me ages to do it. I kept on cutting off, which I hated, and also some rather sinister tales of people. There's one lady had a pocket picked, my wallet was taken on a bus, and I mean she'd taken about £250 with her, for heaven's sake. And another lady went out and got some outrageously good exchange rate for the pound left, and found out the guy had actually just given her Russian rubles, which were worth about £3 instead of 150.
You see, you don't have this problem with the euro, of course, you know, he says, or indeed the pound, but, you know, you go for your levs, you get your rubles, you get your rubles, you get your levs. It's very problematic. Tessa, of course, you were in Spain a few weeks ago. Ever considered Bulgaria?
Definitely, my grandma's been, and apparently it's beautiful. I'd love to go. So, yeah. What was it like?
I've been twice to Bulgaria, and I didn't like the resort very much. Slobodna Sands, it was called. But the hotels are vast and huge, and luxurious. Actually, we had a 4-star when we were staying in it. The fittings were good and all that sort of thing. There was a road that sort of went along by the beach where mostly entertainment was, and that was a bit spivvy. You're constantly having people come on and tell you they have gone to have a drink in this place and that place. My sister, who was an Elvis Presley fan, the man that I accompanied her to this pub has an Elvis Presley impersonator, who shook my hand, apparently, for some reason. And she said, "You'll be able to tell your children that you shook the hand of Elvis Presley." And I said, "Pat, please tell me you know he's dead."
How far, was there a beach nearby?
Yeah, it was a lovely beach, yes. I put a thing on Facebook, actually, I think, from the hotel. It was a fantastic beach. Miles long. The Black Sea is huge, as you probably know. Bulgaria is building like Billy Owen at the moment, and I hope it helps them turn their economy around, because they've been a very poor country for a long time. And funnily enough, when I was teaching at university, some of the best students I had were from Bulgaria. There were very bright girls, there were two or three of them that came over, and very, very motivated. And the people I met that worked in hotels were working for long hours. They work basically 6 months of the year in the hotels, and unless they can get jobs in the ski resorts, they're just basically off. And I don't know what sort of wage we're getting, but we gave them a bit larger tips than normal because we're a bit worried about them. And they were lovely and friendly and happy, and it was a lesson to some of the silly sort of waitresses I've met in England.
Tragically, Ian, the only Facebook updates I can find is something you've put about Newcastle 4, Norwich 3. Championships.
Well, you've got your priorities right anyway, Alex.
And then Donald Trump's success stories. I'm the best businessman in the world because I know how to negotiate.
Yeah.
Number one, bought the Trump Plaza Hotel for $400 million. Repossessed by the bank. And number two, bought his yacht for $29 million, repossessed by the bank. Built 4 casinos at a cost of $3 billion, filed for bankruptcy and went out of business, stiffed contractors and employees. Started Trump Airlines, never made a profit. And Trump Mortgage, Trump Vodka and Trump Steaks all went out of business. So good news for the Americans.
Wow, yeah. Very successful.
Bright future.
He doesn't pay any federal tax, apparently. So that's all right, then.
But nothing about Bulgaria, actually.
I've been back a while. Back 4 or 5 days. I thought I had put a
Well, as you know, apart from the Ollie and Oboe stuff, we're constantly sort of keeping updated with what Ian puts on his Facebook page.
You sad man. And,
well, you know, it gives us something to do while I'm not actually doing annual monitoring reports and various other factors. But,
I'll probably be writing fiction about Manchester City.
Well, on that sort of little bombshell, I think it's time for Ben to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please.
Ian, will you be joining us again?
I do hope so.
And have you enjoyed your experience today?
Oh, very much so. Any time they cast the wind, it's a delight to talk to Alex.
It means
I usually talk more than he does, you see.
it's a way forward.
Sometimes that's very difficult.
Ian Lennox will... Anything you'd like us to sort of raise with Arthur McKenzie in a few moments' time?
You could ask him how his film ventures are going. I don't know if he can talk in detail about it. Arthur's on the verge of becoming a very, very big film writer,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, he's already a big TV writer with Wycliffe and...
Arthur was the... when I was working in television, we had a list of three film writers we wanted to work with. Yeah. And one was Arthur, and the boss said, we can't afford him. And years later, I told Arthur this, and he said, I would have done for nothing if I'd liked it.
And that's the kind of bloke he is.
Well, he is, that's what he is.
Ian,
I was told now, if you don't get paid soon with him, you're going to be eligible for the Olympics.
And he was a UK discus champion as well. Okay, so Arthur will be up, and we'll hopefully squeeze in a little touch of Drink Aware with Dr. Sarah Jarvis, which we've been working through. All of this and more after this.
Hannah Brown, historic Harwick heroine and hyperbolic midweek drivette.
Are you sure it's not Harwich? Harwich heroine?
What did I say?
You said Harwick. The hyperbolic midweek drivette was right. Also, I love the deep breath you took before Hannah. Hannah Brown, like you're taking a big bite out of Hannah Brown. We're keeping all this in.
Now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend who is William Sitwell.
Quite right too. William, welcome back to the programme. How are you, sir?
Very well, very well. Glad to hear about H's.
Yes, we like to keep it there. I mean, we've got 80s because it's music that was played before Tessa Snart, Hannah Brown, or indeed Ben Lewis were actually even born. So, you know, there you go. Welcome back to... I mean, this is actually term one, week one. So we have not one, not two, we have three returning. We have Ben, of course, public relations.
Good morning.
We have Hannah, journalism from Harwich.
Good morning.
And we have Tessa Snart, of course, journalism from Glinton, just outside Peterborough.
Yes, hello.
And William, what have you been up to over the last few weeks? Because, I mean, it's just a whirling wind of magical things that you produce since Eggs or Anarchy emerged like not even a phoenix, like a glorious comet across the sky, in literary terms, of course.
Yeah, don't phoenix is sort of self-combust.
Exactly.
I'm not sure I really like that. Yes.
Well, that's why I've...
My book came out and then exploded.
Much like Donald Trump's business deals have actually done.
I've been running around the country doing food festivals and talks and I went to the Abergavenny Food Festival, which is one of the great ones, been going for years. And doing lots of promotions, lots of, I did the Q Literary Festival, right on Q, get it?
Nice.
Last week. I'm doing Guildford on Monday, and then I do Sheffield next week, and Buxton. So it's proper rock and roll touring, me and my little book.
When you do Buxton, it's almost as though you've got that badge of assurance from the British Isles, I feel, really, the Buxton Football Festival.
Where is Buxton?
Near Derbyshire. And Penny Evans is... In fact, we actually have a Penny Evans tune that we played for the first time yesterday, primarily because we couldn't reach Phil Leonis. He's very apologetic. He claimed he could go there. It's a sea shanty. We could play it for you later when you finish.
Yeah. Maybe I suppose I should really call it Buxton. Really.
Nice, yeah. Yeah. See what you did there? Already getting into the vernacular in terms of the pronunciation, which is excellent.
Exactly. But the other thing you see that's been challenging me is I've gone vegetarian for a month just to see what it's like. So I now know what it's like to be part of a minority. And I'm looking forward to joining the meat eaters again in the rest of society because it's a miserable existence. I miss the flavour and texture of fat. I miss the flavour of succulent meat. I like to be able to get to grips with the flesh of dead things. I like to be able to gut fish and smell the guts. I want to see the blood coming out of meat. And all the vegetables are is just carriers for water that you shove spice on.
So, Hannah, are you a vegetarian?
No, I'm not. I love chicken too much to... become a vegetarian.
Okay, and Tessa?
I'm not. I had considered it because I'm quite fussy when it comes to certain meats. So I'm a chicken lover.
Has William helped you with that little political statement on behalf of
him? I think he has. He could run his own food show, I think. It could be a new...
It's already in the works, I'm sure. I mean, you know the bake-off thing. That sort of stuff, right? Serious point, William. As you know, we've been talking for years about resuscitating and reviving the official Midweek Drivette bake-off. And I think this year we will go with it. So do you want to set some ground rules that Tessa and Ben and Hannah might like to sort of just think about as they build their sort of culinary skills to take part in this festive thing that we'll be having in December?
Well, follow instructions. Mm. Yeah, just read recipes. If you haven't baked before, don't try anything. We're talking about chemical reactions here. You can't just you've got to keep it simple, and you need an oven. That's always a good start. You need some oven gloves. You need a stopwatch, and you need precision. Okay. And then you need to make a lot of mistakes, and relax and be happy about it. And the other thing is realizing that baking is just a gift. It's about love. The TV thing. I don't really I'm not really interested in that. But a good cake, yeah. So. Yeah, just get buy some good books, and get the odd Mary Berry book. Get a good housekeeping, one of their manuals, because they're very good on baking.
A Waitrose food, perhaps.
Well, you could buy that. Yeah, there's a man called Ed Kimber. He's the only Ed I know with two D's. He's a phenomenal baker. In fact, I think he may have been on that Bake Off thing. I'm not sure, but get one of his recipe books. But to me, I like the idea of baking bread. I think we should all break bread at the weekends. We should learn how to make a sourdough starter dough, and we should nurture that in our fridge, get a bit of live yeast going.
Curious, because Linda Hewitt is actually down as one of our potential celebrity judges, having obviously been a midweek drivette and experienced that whole thing. So Linda, or as William likes to refer to her, Naughty Linda, could well be sort of working through that basis. It's marvellous.
Can I just say something?
Of course, William. It's your slot.
Totally irrelevant. Do you know what the Daily Mail has decided to call the Corbyn's coterie of women MPs?
I think I've just seen the update you've put on Facebook, but I won't. I think you need to reveal this.
Jezebels.
Oh.
Isn't that clever?
See what we did there?
I love it.
Genius,
love
exactly.
That.
Just put a matter of 8 minutes ago, and then just wonderful to post on that. It's great. Ben, any questions for the Sitwell Meister?
Ooh. Because all I can think about at the minute is MasterChef, because I always used to see a MasterChef when I was younger as well.
And wanted to be William Sitwell, I believe, Ben.
Well, it does look very appealing. Although I did actually have Stephen Edwards cook once for... we went to South Lodge in Horsham.
which I'm not too sure if you've been there, William, but I would thoroughly recommend it.
Okay, thank you. Yep.
But who's the best person who's ever cooked for you? What's, you know,
what? No pressure on that one. Though.
No,
easy well, peasy.
Well, not just MasterChef in general.
I know, on the entire planet, who's the person who's cooked me? Oh God, I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
Except it wasn't meat, obviously, this morning.
That's okay, I mean, let me tell you. So I had lunch yesterday at Marcus, which is Marcus Waring's restaurant at the Barclay.
Yeah.
And it's the only place so far in my month of vegetarianism where I was offered a whole vegetarian menu and was taken seriously.
Oh, wow.
Whereas the previous weekend, I went to stay with a chef called Marco Pierre White at this hotel in Bath, and he just looked at me and they were just totally disdainful.
He loves meat, though, doesn't he, Marco?
Yeah, but... So the best lunch I've had in the last 24 hours was yesterday, which was a sort of 70,000 course menu at the Barclay, and that was phenomenal, phenomenal.
What was the highlight of the menu?
I can't talk about the wine. The Montrachet. It's a very good white Burgundy. What was good? I can't remember. There was a bit of pasta. There was an aubergine dish that was exquisite. I think for vegetarians, aubergines and avocados are the saviours, really. And the pulses, lentils, those sorts of things.
They keep us thriving and surviving.
Indeed.
That's the important thing. Eggs or Anarchy is available in all sorts. So indeed is a history of the world in the 100 recipes. History of food in 100 recipes. Tessa, any thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, since you've been really, really busy over the summer and everything, have you actually had time for a holiday? Have you been anywhere?
Well, I did go to Zimbabwe, but that was on a 7-day cricket tour. So I didn't really relax. You sound like my mother.
Did you not get to see Zimbabwe at all? Did you not get to?
No, I saw it. I mean, we were in a van driving along, you know, from Harare to Matare into Bulawayo. It's a beautiful country. I'm now reading a book called The Last Resort, which is an account written by a guy who's the son of two white farmers and their battle to stay on their land, which is an amazing book about Zimbabwe and about the beauty of the place and the people.
Yeah.
But I want to go on holiday. Maybe a cheeky weekend in Lincoln.
Come and join us. You can come on Midweek Drive.
Here we are. With a special weekend edition.
Yeah.
Tessa, of course, does take on board the role of matriarch of the Midweek Drive, as you can hear here now. Oh, you could have heard it.
Work, did it?
It doesn't want to work now.
You know, how bizarre. Let's try this. No, it's clearly said. It's given up. It's a whole. So how surreal is the Mr. Machine? Let's
you should play Hannah's. Hers is
funny. We'll do this. No, how bizarre. Okay, Richard. Richard, William. Suddenly, it's all going. Getting a car crash. This is what happens when you stop eating meat. Obviously.
Don't blame me. The fact your knobs are. Nothing happens when you press your knobs.
You know, there are
too early for this.
It was destined to happen in some way, shape or form. Hannah, go. Last two questions for William Sitwell, please.
Okay. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, it's been a pleasure to hang out with you children.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Probably. I mean, you know, you would know. Yes.
So, he doesn't sound sure, does he?
Well, next week, fingers crossed, we should hopefully be joined by the head of events and management at the university, of course, the returning Ellie Sample, who I've already been singing William's praises as being, I think William should be one of the university's great minds. By the way, what's happening in that kitchen, William? What's going on there?
Well, the kitchen where I'm in?
Yes.
Well, it's quiet at the moment. There's a few people making coffee, but at some point people will walk in with shopping and start testing recipes. The last couple of weeks, we've been testing Christmas. Christmas is going to press. Mm. So we've been, cooking up some amazing pieces of beef, some alternates to turkey. We're doing some leftovers. I think we did a chestnut and Brussels sprout pizza. That was quite interesting. This is the cutting edge of leftover research going on.
Have you ever been eating the beef on your vegetarian?
No,
it was complete utter torture. All I could do.
Well, here's Melanie. She doesn't eat animals either. No, she does. Oh, fair enough. Oh, one day.
I was just thinking about the way it's supposed to be. vegetables and I'll grow on seeds. But I don't need animals and they don't need me. Oh no, I don't need animals cause I love them, you see. I don't need animals, I want nothing dead in me. I don't eat white flour, white sugar makes you rot. Oh, white could be beautiful, but mostly it's not. A little bit of wholemeal, some raisins and cheese. But I don't need animals, and they don't need me. Oh no, I don't need animals, cause I love them, you see. I don't need animals, I want nothing dead in me.
A couple of years ago, of course, the notion of the moob actually emerged in terms of man boobs. And it's fair to say that most men are not really proud of their moobs, nor should they be, because 1 in 10 of men are just happy with their physique. And to tie this in to a very important range of research from Drinkaware, we're delighted to welcome a dynamic duo of experts. First of all, ace media GP extraordinaire Dr. Sarah Jarvis. Good morning, Sarah.
With an introduction like that, I'm quite looking forward to hearing me speak.
Marvellous. And the wonderful research and insight manager from Drinkaware, Andrew Russell. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
Sarah, if we can come to you first. I mean, clearly the pear shape and body shape and all kinds of aspects have been changing over the years, but with more sedentary lifestyles, with the tendency to do more office work and so on, and of course the notion of liquid lunches being not necessarily as good as they ever were, really, from your own perspective. Is this something you're seeing an increase in from the point of view of, as the survey reveals, just 1 in 10 men aged 40 to 65 are completely happy with their body shape?
It absolutely is. What we're seeing is that, unfortunately, we have got a huge increase in obesity, and unfortunately an awful lot of men do tend to carry that excess weight around their bellies. Now, that has a particular impact in terms of your risk of type 2 diabetes. Moobs are all part of the same thing. You're an apple, you're not a pear. That's particularly bad in terms of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and in terms of heart disease. But one of the things we were looking at in this survey was that actually, if you're drinking more than the government recommended units, then as a midlife man, you really need to start thinking not just about heart disease, not just about type 2 diabetes, but also about cancer. And what we were seeing from this was that middle-aged men who were drinking more than the lower guidelines in this survey were drinking on average about 37 units a week. That sounds like quite a lot, but actually 3 pints just 5 times a week is going to add up to that, or 3 cans of fairly normal strength lager. It could be even fewer cans if you're drinking the strong lagers. If you could cut that down by just one drink on those 5 nights a week, go down from 3 pints to 2 pints on 5 nights a week, you could cut your risk of dying from alcohol from nearly 1 in 10 to under 1 in 20.
And clearly Drinkaware, it's part of the focus to develop that whole strategy. Andrew, when you saw the results of this survey, was it something which you said, well, I'm not surprised at all, really. I could have predicted that.
I think I was a little taken aback by just how many men had concerns about their body shape, with 80% saying they would like to change or improve their stomachs, and 44% pointing to their moobs as an area they'd like to improve. And I think the real thing that comes out of it is that these guys know what they ought to be doing. They all said, if I were to make changes, I'd take up running or walking or cycling, I'd go to the gym, and they said I would cut down on my drinking.
So the key thing is make those changes, as probably Arthur McKenzie would endorse from that point of view. Arthur, I presume you've never been fretful about moobs or man boobs or anything else in this particular area, have you?
No.
It was a question we thought we'd just sort of launch with. Tessa Start will be leaving us in a matter of moments to actually head to do what, Tessa?
Print.
Print.
Yeah, newspapers, exactly. And magazines.
Newspapers
and
magazines.
Digital photography.
So, Arthur, what advice would you give Tessa as she goes off in her Level 2 journalism course here at the University of Lincoln to do print? What's the Arthur McKenzie thought for the day?
The thought for the day was be yourself. And go the way you want to go. Take every bit of advice you can, take the best bits, and get rid of the bad bits.
Oh, thank you.
There we are.
I will.
Splendid stuff. And Hannah, any questions that you'd like to put to the great Arthur Mackenzie, as indeed Ian Lennox described him as, quite literally, the great Arthur Mackenzie, the top writer who everybody would wish to work with. And sometimes, if Arthur said, if he likes the script, he'd do it for free.
Oh, I see you do sport writing. What's your opinions on the recent news about the
Sam
ex-England Allardyce? Manager? I can't remember his name, but I know he's now the ex-England manager.
Well, I think he just gets what he deserves, doesn't he, really? I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, if you're going to be an England manager getting £3 million contract, I mean, I just don't understand what he was thinking about. So it's all about integrity, and there's got to be integrity at that level, and bad judgment. If he's going to make a bad judgment about that, what's he going to do on a football field?
As I said, it was probably just going for a laugh. I mean, that's why he got in Bradley Walsh to actually entertain the players. Maybe it was just a joke that went wrong, Arthur.
I don't think it was funny, really.
Well, you see, that's why it went wrong. Ben, questions for yourself.
Are you like Ian? Are you a Newcastle fan as well, or are you a Sunderland?
Well, I'm a North East fan. I want to see all the teams in the North East do well.
So that's
not sitting on the fence, that's real. As I say, Newcastle have had so many problems over the years. Sunderland have got problems. Middlesbrough seem to be come through the middle and doing well. So I'd like to see them all do well. I'd like to see them all in the Premiership.
And, of course, there's always Hartlepool. I mean, Darlington are actually progressing in their own sort of way, but perhaps that's up go there. Ben, of course, is from Brighton. Arthur, have you ever been to Brighton?
Yes, I have.
What were your thoughts?
I competed there. Quite liked it. Oh. It was quite nice. I thought it was a lovely place, actually, yeah.
I always like to make sure it works.
Oh, I like it. It's good.
It's good.
Very good.
We're not sure whether, as Ian pointed out, you're able to talk about your movies, but I think, Hannah, Ian's words were, Arthur's going to be very big in film shortly.
Well, there's a couple of projects on the go, yes. As I say, I can't talk about them yet.
Exactly.
With a bit of luck and a good wind. But I don't get myself too excited about these things because they take forever. And when that happens, it's sometimes an anticlimax anyhow.
Got to have your phlegmatism around from the whole point of view. That's the key thing. And apart from mentioning at the Lincoln Drill Hall, according to the delightful John Wenham's diary, on Tuesday, the 4th of October, there's a lunchtime concert at 1 p.m. as part of the Lincolnshire International Chamber Music Festival, where you can actually see tenor Mark Wilde, accompanied by David Owen Norris on the piano, for a programme that includes works by Parry, Sterndale Bennett and Battison Haynes. Tickets are mere £8. Inquiries 01522873894. It leaves us for Hannah to put those last two questions to your good self, Arthur, in terms of, well, you know, this short, brief, but nevertheless perfectly formed little time link we've had to wrap up the programme today.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes.
That's good.
Nice.
Will you be joining us again soon?
Well, I hope so.
Exactly. Well, next week, Arthur, as we mentioned, we should be joined, as well as the Ace Midweek Drivettes, by also the head of events at the university. That's Ellie Sample. So exciting news from that. We're wrapping up with Ben's brother. Not literally, it's just carry on. And more thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Nicola from PayPal, Ian Lennox, Dr. Sarah Jarvis, Amy Yorston, Mike Hewitson, Charles Hairsnape, William Sitwell, and your good self, Arthur Mackenzie. And thanks, of course, to Ben Lewis, Tessa Snart, and who's actually headed, she's already ascended, etc., and Hannah Brown. That's it, that's a wrap. Have a sensational Thursday. Can we all now say bye-bye?
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye now.